Here the Turtle is presented by Toyota. Toyota helps you get the most out of your drive. Just ask a friend who drives one. Shop buyatoyota.com, Toyota's official website for deals, to find the Toyota that's right for you. Toyota, let's go places.
Len Elmore will be at center, 6'9", senior from Springfield Gardens, New York. He's their all-time champion rebounder, averaging 14.8 this year.
I said choosing Maryland was the best decision I ever made. And I still believe to this day it contributed to a lot of the success that I've had.
He's rejected by Lewis.
Lewis can block a few of them. He's blocked 41 this year.
Well, listen, he set a record last year with 99 shots that he blocked, 10 in one game alone.
Jones out of the corner, the third one in for Hughes.
One of the biggest threes he'll ever hit. Came in with a reputation as a shooter.
And I still now, 16 years later, you know, I still get that, you know, Mike Jones type of thing, and it brings back a lot of good memories.
Ravis Vasquez, the player of the year in the ACC. Yes, and a foul.
Maryland is in my DNA for sure. Like, I represent and breathe, and I love it. When you love something and you're passionate about something, everything else is much easier.
You're listening to Hear the Turtle. Your hosts are Taylor Slythe and Keith Snedden.
It's Monday, November 2nd, 2020. It's Hear the Turtle, presented by Toyota and Keith. It's another edition of our Maryland Record Breakers podcast series, presented by our friends at Chesapeake Employers Insurance. And today we bring on, I keep saying the word legend, but it's legend after legend after legend. It's Tom McMillan, one of the great pure scorers in Maryland history, a man steeped in legacy, a guy more accomplished than either of us may will ever have been combined, and all of the things he's done athletically in the classroom, in the house chamber. This guy has absolutely done it all, and it was really, really cool to talk to Tom and get his perspective on his different scoring records, double-double records, a bunch of different things that we'll lay out right before we talk to Tom. But what a great guy and such a leader, both in basketball and now outside of it.
Taylor, I'm going to declare it right now. If Tom McMillan played varsity ball as a freshman, he would be the all-time scoring leader at Maryland over Juan Dixon.
Yes, he would.
I think that's a fair proclamation to make based on just how heralded of a recruit he was coming out of high school and the impact he could have had. I mean, can you imagine a guy like him and Len Elmore not being able to play as freshmen in today's day and age? I mean, some of the best college basketball players we see year in and year out who are making the All-America lists and, you know, going in that first round of the NBA draft are the, you know, the young freshman guys coming right out of high school ready to play and ready to perform at the highest level on the college rank. So I don't think there's any doubt about it. Tom McMillan would have been that guy, but he's got the scoring average record to his name and probably one of the more, I think, underappreciated or unknown stories. Maybe it's just because, you know, it's not an era that I'm as familiar with, but the fact that he was running for Congress while playing in the NBA and, you know, holding a campaign during, you know, his NBA career. And I said it in the interview, but I just can't imagine, or, you know, I could almost believe that a player doing that at a time like, you know, we're going through now with, you know, the NBA bubble situation, the different racial and social justice issues that were kind of at the forefront of the NBA season this year. You know, seeing a player do that now who was actively playing in the NBA and campaigning at the same time, it's like you can imagine it, you can kind of see it, but Tom McMillan lived it. And I think that's just a testament to the individual he is.
Yeah, absolutely amazing, all the stuff he did off the court. Just to revisit the point about the scoring, I mean, if you look at his freshman numbers, 29 points a game on that freshman team, and then essentially average, you know, 20 a game over the course of his career, I'm pretty sure if he steps in there as a freshman, even if we dock him a couple points off his, you know, what became his standard total, even if he averages 15 or 16 a game, he ends up getting there. And that's obviously no knock on the guys in the top of that list, Juan and Len Bias and Gravis Vasquez, but Tom McMillan could fill it up, and he could fill it off from the day he stepped on campus. 29-15 on a freshman team that, as you hear, will hear him say, may have been a little more popular than the varsity. And then that they became one of the legendary groups once they got to their senior year, him and Len Elmore, who we talked to with John Lucas on perhaps the greatest team to never make the NCAA tournament, which is a tough thing to have on your resume, but also realizing how talented that group was. And then, as you said, got into it with Tom about a bunch of different stuff outside the court, which I think it will really interest Maryland fans. We didn't even get to the fact that he is in one of the most notorious Olympic moments of all time, the gold medal essentially being stolen away in 1972 by the Soviets and the officials there in Munich. So I really wanted to ask him about that, and the man's a busy guy, so we had a half an hour with him, and we got to the end of that half an hour, and we just didn't have any time. So a guy we could have on again and talk about a thousand other stories. So let's hear from Tom McMillan about his records that he has, and a bunch of different other subjects in this interview right now.
For more than 100 years, Chesapeake Employers Insurance has been helping Maryland businesses keep their workers safe. With competitive pricing and an AM Best A-minus financial strength rating, it's no surprise that Chesapeake Employers is Maryland's largest writer of workers' comp insurance.
At the end of every workday, someone's waiting for your safe return.
Connect with your agent or visit CEIWC.com.
We're back here on Hear the Turtle with one of the all-time greats in Maryland basketball history, Tom McMillan. And Tom, before we go into this, I'm just going to list off your records here at Maryland. Career scoring average, 20 and a half a game, 20-point games with 48, and career double-doubles with 46. Of those three records, which do you feel like is the most unbreakable at this point?
Well, you know, time has changed so much. That I always tell people that it's a good question. I mean, records are to be broken, but, you know, we're not necessarily comparing apples to apples. You know, I tell people, when I played, we and Lenny Elmore and all of us played, we didn't have a shot clock, which was introduced in the 80s. So, obviously, people would slow the ball down at the end of the game because you were ahead, and that's how you preserve your leads. We played a lot fewer games. We played 28, 29 games a year. If we went a ways in the playoffs, and today they play 35, at least 36 more, five, six more games. And then the other thing is I didn't play as a freshman. So you know, I didn't have the opportunity. So when you're always looking at stats, like for instance, let me just give you an example. I played 88 games when I was at Maryland. And Juan Dixon is a great player, terrific athlete, and so forth. Played 141. So he had 53 more games to score a lot of points. So career scoring averages are probably – that's probably more immutable because that doesn't necessarily make a difference how many games you played. And I forget the other stat you asked me about, but
– career double-doubles and 20-point games.
Career double-doubles. You know, again, I wish I had those other 53 games I could have played. But, you know, it takes nothing away from the one in our current players who are great and so forth. It shows you one of the problems in comparing historical results to current results because, you know, most people don't realize I didn't play as a freshman. And, I'm about 400 some points behind Juan for the leading scorer in Maryland's history. But over 53 games, that would have been my freshman year. If I just averaged 10 points a game, I would have been able to prevail. But you know, the point is, records are to be broken. It's hard to, as a statistician, to kind of compare apples and oranges because they're truly apples and oranges.
Tom, as you said, you rank. Sorry, Keith. As you rank ninth all time on the all time score list, and as you said, only did that in 88 games. What do you feel like made you such an effective scorer?
You know, we didn't have a 3-point shot, so I wish we did. Particularly in the corner, that's you know, for me, that was a pretty good shot. But I think what I was good at, I was good at scoring on. I was kind of one of those players who could score on the outside, who could score on the inside. And that outside-inside match, although not as dramatic today with the three-point, I think made the difference. And then, you know, I got fouled a lot, and I was a pretty good free-throw shooter. So those are the reasons. And the other thing, Coach Drizella didn't believe a lot in substituting. He stayed with you come thick or thin. That's just the way he played seven players. He didn't go much deeper than that. Matter of fact, in that great North Carolina State final game, you know, the, in 1974, seven of our players played and seven of State's players played. It just wasn't a loss of substitution, which is a different kind of game today. I think today a coach has to substitute deep into his bench, otherwise players transfer and leave. And so the dynamics of keeping teams together are different. So that's another factor that's out there.
Tom, you've touched on it a couple of times, but how frustrating was it to come in as a freshman and probably feel like you were ready to play, but not be able to just because of the way the NCAA ran the rules back then? Did you remember those conversations you might have had with Len Elmore, whoever it was, just like, man, like I wish we were out there right now, because I bet you felt you could have made an impact right away.
Well, we would play the varsity team and beat them. And then when we played at Cole, oftentimes our games were sold out. People would come to the game and then leave. They didn't even stay around for the varsity. that happened. But, you know, I didn't really think about it much at the time. For me personally, it was a time to get adjusted. I was a pre-med major. I was chemistry. I had chemistry labs. I had some pretty tough courses. And, you know, having that little transition into college wasn't bad for me, you know, and that's the only way we knew it. We just never thought that, you know, you played as a freshman. It really didn't dawn on us till a couple of years later when Lucas was able to come in and play as a freshman. So it just wasn't part of our thinking at the time.
What was your mindset heading into that first season in 71-72? Did you feel ready at that point to kind of go in and do what you needed to do?
Absolutely. We had gone 16-0 as freshmen. We were the best freshman team in the country. We were really good. And we came in. And I remember one of the early games in my sophomore year, we lost to Virginia in Charlottesville. And it was a tough loss for us because it was a wake-up call. And so we had that wake-up call early in our sophomore year, and that made all the difference, because after that we understood the ACC a little bit better. When you're a freshman, you know, you're not really playing on Tobacco Road. We played mostly games around here, and we didn't travel that far. Then when you start going down to Chapel Hill and Clemson and some of those schools, Duke, it's a different experience, and really takes you a year to get used to it. So coming in as my sophomore year, I didn't have much of an adjustment. We were right into it. So that was an experience.
Tom, your older brother Jay was actually a stud at Maryland himself in the 60s, averaged 17 points a game, and you were one of the most sought-after recruits in the country. How much influence did he have on you choosing to go to Maryland?
Well, to your point, Jay was a very good college player, 17 points a game, and he was playing for Bud Milk. He was a great coach, but he played a very slow down game. For Jay to even score 17 points was quite remarkable at the time. He was a very good shooter from the outside. You know, Jay was very instrumental in my recruiting, but we don't have enough time on this show to go through all the machinations of my recruiting. But let me just say that I was originally committed to Carolina, and literally to the last day when registration was closing, I changed my mind to come to Maryland. And the real reason behind that, I liked Lefty, I liked Maryland, I liked coming to a program and building something, but my father was sick and he wanted to see me play. And so he saw me play all my college year, and then he passed away my senior year. So ultimately it was a familial reason that pushed me back to Maryland.
Lefty Driesell is such a revered guy in Maryland history. What was it like playing for a guy like that? Such a unique personality and someone that made such an impact on the game of college basketball in so many ways.
Well, he came from Davidson. He put Davidson on the map, a school of 1,000 kids. And if he had gotten Charlie, he very well could have won two national titles at Davidson. He was going after Charlie Scott. Charlie was coming, and then he went to Carolina. And so Dino, Lefty always felt that my going to Carolina and switching to Maryland was payback for Charlie Scott, which might have been true because Lefty did remarkable things at Davidson. He came to Maryland. He was truly a marketing genius. At the time, Maryland was the only school in the country that had a full-time sports marketing department. You think that's sort of commonplace today, but back then it wasn't. And, you know, he reframed Cole Fieldhouse. He brought the seats down. He made it into a real basketball arena. And those are just some of the superficial things. I mean, he just brought the program into greater notability. And when you talk about sports in Washington at the time, it was, you know, Lefty Driesell, it was Ted Williams, it was George Allen. I mean, he was a legend in this town, and because he really put basketball on the map in Washington, D.C.
And Tom, to follow up on that, what did it mean to you to see Lefty get inducted into the, you know, the pro or the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame? Something that, you know, had been, you know, hanging over his head for many, many years, and to finally get that recognition in the Basketball Hall of Fame. What did it mean to you?
Well, it was long overdue, and, you know, we all worked hard to make it happen. But, you know, it was really to Coach's credit that, you know, he was very magnanimous about it. You know, he just should have been in earlier. I mean, at the time he retired, there was only the most iconic coaches, Bobby Knight, Adolph Rupp, and I think Dean Smith might have been ahead of him in all-time wins. And he did it in four different programs. This wasn't just going to a school and staying 40 years, 30 years, and winning a lot of games. He did it by moving around to different schools. All but Maryland was very small. I mean, they were programs that he had to go in and establish something. And so he's really, truly the turnaround king in college sports because he did it four times. And I think that really made the whole Hall of Fame thing possible.
Tom, you played on one of the most talented teams in Maryland history that Lefty put together with, you know, led by you, John Lucas, Len Elmore. We talked to Len a couple of months ago about this same team. What was it like playing with that group that was just incredibly, incredibly talented?
Well, I forget. Well, I mean, we have so many guys that were drafted by the pros. Lenny and I were, you talk about my senior year, particularly my senior year when the, Lenny 73, and I
74.
Were
73, 74.
Yeah. Lenny and I were seniors. And then we had John Lucas, who was a, you know, up and coming star. And we had that itself was a great nucleus just to have three tremendous players. Then we had, you know, Mo White, Mo Howard, and Owen Brown and Tom Roy and a lot of other players. And so it was a terrific team, but it was a group that got along pretty well too, which is extremely important. It shows you the history of all this in the sense that we could be, you know, the third, second best team in the country and never go to the NCAA and put playoffs. I mean, you know, you can lose your conference and still go to the NCAA today. As a matter of fact, when Maryland won the national title, they lost the conference title. So there were second chances. We didn't have second chances. And as a result of that, they changed the rules. They opened it up from 25 games when I was playing. I think they went to 34, and here we are today at 68. It's a lot easier to get in the NCAAs than it was when we played. Matter of fact, there were only 16 teams in the NIT and 25 in the NCAA. So either one of those was more exclusive than today because you have you have second chances today. And there were none of those back then.
We'll be right back to our Maryland Basketball Record Breakers interview. But first, a word from our sponsor, Chesapeake Employers Insurance. Chesapeake Employers Insurance is a proud partner of University of Maryland Athletics. for more than 100 years, Chesapeake has been helping Maryland businesses keep their workers safe. With competitive pricing and an AM Best A-minus financial strength rating, it's no surprise that Chesapeake Employers is Maryland's largest writer of workers' comp insurance. Connect with your agent or visit CEIWC.com. That's CEIWC.com.
Tom, I have to ask you about that ACC championship game against NC State, one of the legendary college basketball games of all time. You guys obviously on the wrong end of it. But what do you think about how, you sort of touched on it there, just how much that changed NCAA basketball? And is there a little silver lining to that, even though you guys didn't get the win on that day, which I'm sure is still a little bit hard to stomach?
It was frustrating. You know, you think back to that March date, 1974, we were as good as any team. We were playing very well. We really whizzed through the tournament and we had to play, you know, night after night. State had a bye. And so we were playing against them after playing two previous nights and State had only played one night. And we were playing very well. I think we shot 60% in that game. And as I said, if a couple breaks either way, we would have easily won that. The irony of all that is that State went on to win the national championship. Literally, they played the ACC championship in Greensboro, and then they went on and played the rest of, I think, the Eastern Finals and the Finals in North Carolina as well. So it was a year that was almost designed for North Carolina State because they never had to go outside their state. And it does make a difference. When we were playing that final game in the tournament, I mean – We probably 80% of the fans were Carolina fans and State fans, and 20% of them were ours because the State fans would buy up all the other tickets from everybody else. And that's the way it was. So you were literally playing on an away court. And so that's also made it very difficult.
Tom, another record you can maybe put to your name, maybe off the court, not exactly basketball related, but the first ever Rhodes Scholar from the University of Maryland. When you think back to that moment when you learned, you know, you were getting that honor and just think of your life and your trajectory and all the things you've accomplished since, you know, how seminal was that moment for you in your career?
Well, for me, if people ask me what was my proudest accomplishment at Maryland, it was that. People are surprised about that, but because Maryland had never had a Rhodes Scholar and even to this date, we've only had one more. It was a very special privilege to represent the University at Oxford. And, you know, it was a great thrill to win that scholarship. Only 32 are given every year in America. So it's a special club. You know, it's great to be an All-American. It's great to be, you know, have a scoring record at Maryland. But in the scheme of things, when you're one of 32, it's really a special thing. And so that experience was probably the most impactful in my life and probably the memory I remember most about Maryland.
Tom, we sit in here in an election year, and one of the records you maybe hold to is the tallest ever congressman. Are you claiming that record as the tallest ever member of the U.S. Congress?
Well, it is true, yes. And the irony of that is probably the other record that I have is that when I was playing for the Washington Bullets at the time, now the Wizards, I was running for Congress during my last season. I was a candidate while I was still in the NBA.
Really? That's unbelievable.
Yeah, no one's ever done that. So I left the season in May. We were in the playoffs. We lost to Philadelphia. And then my primary was that same month. And I won the primary and then won the election. Very close election, but playing in the NBA and running for Congress is a pretty unique thing to do.
So, did you have any thought of staying in Congress and continuing to play?
Well, I mean, if I lost, maybe I might have considered that. But, no, I was kind of finished. I had 11 years in the NBA plus 1 year abroad, so that was a long time. And, you know, I had my mind that I wanted to do something post-sports that was different. And I had played with Bill Bradley on the Knicks his last year on the Knicks. And he had left the Knicks and a couple years later ran for the Senate. So Bill advised me throughout this whole process, and he told me to run while I was in the NBA. So I continued. I announced for Congress while I was still in the NBA.
I'm just imagining a player in today's era doing something like that, and what a national story that would be. So that's pretty incredible.
Well, I mean, it was a big story even back then, but yeah. You don't have social media. And,
right.
You know, what happened was every time I went in the game, the announcers announced I was a candidate for Congress. My opponent filed all kinds of complaints, you know. But it was I would grab Larry Bird or Magic Johnson after the game, and I bought some season tickets, and I would have a group of my supporters there, and I would bring over Magic or Larry after the game or one of those guys to say hi to him. So it was one way I could campaign while I was still playing basketball.
Tom, you are the current president and CEO of the Lead One Association, mm-hmm. which advises athletic directors, shapes the rules and regulations of college sports, advocates for the future of college sports. Kind of a broad question here, but in your eyes, what does the future of college athletics in the landscape look like? What are, to you, the most pressing issues that are facing college athletics in the industry today?
Well, I the first thing, I think this election will have a big impact on college sports, maybe the most important impact in college sports of any presidential election, because if the political winds change and the Democrats get control of the Senate or the presidency, you could have much broader reform measures being passed in the Congress relative to college sports. Right now they're working on name, image, and likeness legislation, but it could be much broader than that. As a matter of fact, some of our ADs are talking about what could that look like, some of those reform areas. Obviously, the one that they're concerned about after COVID is the financial sustainability of the model. You have more rising costs, and it's harder and harder to sustain. And there's a greater stratification between the haves and the have schools with resources, plenty of resources, and those maybe with lesser resources. And that's a problem because, you know, you're trying to have an even playing field competitively, but it's getting more difficult with schools being separated because of resources. And then NIL will complicate that because every school is going to have an NIL factory. They're going to teach these kids how to maximize their brand. And although the school won't be doing it, they'll be training the kids on how they use Facebook, how they use Google, how they use Instagram to maximize their brand. And that's going to be a whole new arms race. What can I do for student athlete A to get them to make more money in that name, image, and likeness? And that we don't know how that's going to play out. One of my big concerns is the increasing professionalization of college sports. The fact that, you know, if we're not careful, we're going to look like pro sports. And I think that has consequences for colleges and universities. I think we have to be careful. But I think the courts and the legislatures are running down that path. And, you know, they may wake up and not be happy with what the result is. Clearly, student athletes need, you know, more protection, more benefits and so forth. But drawing that line without turning them into paid professionals is always very tricky.
Absolutely. It's probably a 4 or 5 hour podcast we could do delving into all the different things.
Very, very tricky stuff.
Involved with college athletics. Tom, we'll get you out of here on a couple quick ones. First of all, there is always a clip. I've always been interested in this that we use at Maryland Highlights of you shooting on the baseline behind the basket with just the beautiful follow through going through. How did you learn that just sort of perfect looking shooting form? Where did that come from?
Well, my brother was a very good outside shooter. And so we kind of grew up in a family that, you know, learned how to shoot pretty early. And that was one thing that I was blessed with being able to shoot outside. I wish we had a 3-point line, which didn't come in until later on, because that would have, you know, I figure I probably would have scored, you know, maybe an extra point a game or so just with a 3-point shot. you learn how to become a good shooter just by practicing. That's the bottom line.
Tom, you played at Coalfield House as it kind of came into its own. What are your favorite memories from that great building?
Well, my favorite memories, I was there as a high school kid watching Kentucky play Texas Western. That was a great iconic moment in college sports. It was important because of race and because of lots of reasons, but it was neat to be there for that. I was there in Cole for the ping pong matches with the Chinese, and I was there in a lot of momentous times. But for me, the moment and the memory that I remember is when my last game, my senior year, Lenny and I were lifted on the shoulders of all the fans, and we were taken over to the baskets to cut the nets down. But it was just a spontaneous eruption in Cole Fieldhouse. And, you know, having played there as an athlete, you don't really think about the crowd much. You're always out there focused on the game. And then after the game's over, you focus on when all these people are lifting you up on their shoulders, which was kind of a memory that you just won't forget.
We'll get you out of here on this. We've asked all of our Record Breaker series participants this question. Your all-time Maryland starting five.
Oh, I know. That's a hard one. Oh, boy. You know, I'm going to really have to think about that. But first of all, I'm going to go with Lenny and Luke on my team because I think they could play today. And of course, Lenny Bias is – I think he was just such an exceptional athlete. And I'd probably go with, so I have to fill that. So now I have then I need another guard. I'd probably go with Juan Dixon. I mean, that's a pretty good group of players, you know. I have to be prejudiced to my generation, as you can imagine.
You got to pick your guys.
Are you putting yourself on as the fifth? Because you have Len, you have two Lens, yes, Juan and John.
Well, theoretically, no, but. Yes,
I you got to get yourself a little on bit, there.
But you know, if I weren't picking myself, there's so many great players, Buck and Joe, and so many big guys that I could pick. I know you want me to pick one. It's really hard though over the years because different guys play in different generations. It's really hard to compare. It's like people ask me, who was the best NBA player I ever played against? And that skews to really more who I guarded, who I had to one-on-one play. Not necessarily the best. Like, I played against Michael Jordan, but I really didn't play against him for a couple of years. But I had to guard Larry Bird. And so my answer would be more Bird-oriented because I saw firsthand what he could do. And I didn't have that experience with Jordan because I wasn't having to guard him and he didn't guard me and those kinds of things. So it's really, really kind of difficult sometimes to.
Now, let me tell you, when we had Walt Williams on, he was adamant that you were in his starting five. He was adamant you had to be on.
Well, those are all, without prejudice to Walt or Joe or all the great players that played at Maryland, I'd have to think about that a little bit before I could answer completely, but.
There you go.
But I'll stay with my generation.
Absolutely. Tom McMillan, one of the all-time greats in Maryland history and doing so much for college athletics now that me and Keith are tuned into with the Lee One Association. Awesome stuff. Thanks for taking some time for us.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Good luck to you all. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
Back here on Hear the Turtle, presented by Toyota. Once again, that interview with Tom McMillan brought to you by our friends at Chesapeake Employers Insurance for all your employers' insurance needs. And Tom is starting to bring us to the end of our Record Breaker series, which, as me and Keith have talked about ad nauseum, has been fantastic. Once again, thanks to Tom for coming on. Some incredible stories. We've only got one left. This is going to be it coming up next Monday, and it is a man very familiar to Terrapin fans, Keith.
It's Anthony Cowan Jr. And yes, who better to kind of bring this thing full circle when we release this episode next Monday, kind of as your lead-in to the start of basketball season. I think I mentioned that in one of our earlier episodes, but it's Ant. He's back. I think third or fourth time on this podcast.
Yeah, Taylor. It might be his like fifth or sixth time at this point. And we kind of just bring Anthony out of the bullpen when we need to talk. And I think it's our best interview with him so far. He has transformed himself as a podcaster himself. So, you know, he's got the gift of gab now and will eventually take our jobs. But obviously all of the records that Terp fans are now fresh in following him trying to break, and all of the things he could have potentially continued to rise up the ranks on. That's actually one of the fascinating parts about finishing the series with Anthony. And we just talked about it with Tom, how he had a year taken from him to potentially have more of a name in those record books. Anthony Cowan Jr. had, you know, potentially, you know, it could have been three or four games. It could have been six or seven games taken away from him to continue to rise up the rail in record books. And he talks pretty candidly about that and gives some great stuff. So a really interesting end, and a guy both you and I know. So a good interview with Anthony Cowan, and that will be the end of our Record Breaker series. And as you said, Keith, brings us right into the Terps, who will get underway in now under a month, which is crazy to think about as men's and women's basketball get back underway. Obviously, the current Terps will be replacing Mr. Anthony Cowan at the point guard position, but got some welcome news with Jarius Hamilton being declared eligible. So the basketball news coming fast and furious as those guys, you know, try to prove some people wrong. The Terps came in with a lot of hype last year, coming in a little under the radar this year. And sometimes we see that works. So it'll be interesting to watch them this season. Thanks once again to Tom McMillan for jumping on the show with us as a part of our Record Breaker series. Make sure to go back and listen with Election Day coming up here to our interview with Hope Lewandowski, Julia Rayson, and Taylor Wilson from our women's soccer track and field and softball teams, talking about the Vote Terp initiative. They were absolutely fantastic. Thanks again once again for coming on. If you haven't listened to all of our Record Breaker series, if you're just jumping on because you're a big Tom McMillan person, go back and listen to them. Terrell Stokes, Len Elmore, Gravis Vasquez, the Lewis brothers. Who am I missing?
Walt Williams. Point? Come on, Tim.
Walt, how could I miss the Wizard? Don't tell Walt that. Don't tell Walt that I missed the Wizard.
And Mike Jones.
And Mike Jones, all of them absolutely fantastic, and we really appreciate their time, and we'll come to the end of this. And hopefully, once things get back to normal, we'll roll into the events, and maybe next summer we'll come back and just grab some more immense basketball legends. I could talk to these guys all day. Make sure to follow us on all of our social media channels, at Hear the Turtle on Twitter, at Hear the Turtle on Instagram. For the man himself, Keith Sneddon, the guy that gets it done on the air, off the air, behind the scenes. He does it all. Sned311. You can follow me at TaylorSmite10. And we will see you next time on Hear the Turtle, presented by Toyota.
Go Terps.